In his book, The Imaginations of Unreasonable Men, Bill Shure sets out to map where we are and where we're headed in the battle against malaria, a disease that claims over 800,000 lives each year, with 81% of its victims under the age of 5. Mr. Shure is familiar with overcoming the frustrations involved in defying impossible odds. In 1984, he founded Share Our Strength, an organization dedicated to ending childhood hunger in the United States. Over the 7 years, he has observed the front lines in the fight against malaria, the past 7 years anyway, and the men and women working to develop vaccines to save lives all over the world. His book is published by Public Affairs, and I'm pleased that it brings Bill Shure to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, how does the fight against malaria connect to Share Our Strength?
Well, it's a great question. I think they're very connected, because what I realized at Share Our Strength and what I realized as I studied these men and women who were fighting malaria is that the toughest problems to solve are those that affect people who are so voiceless and economically marginalized that there are no markets for solving them. And so you need a whole different set of entrepreneurial strategies.
Well, malaria is not a problem in this country, at least anymore. Is it true that the Continental Congress allocated funds to fight malaria in George Washington's army?
That's right. I mean, malaria used to be a serious issue in the United States. In fact, not only did it exist in George Washington's Continental Army, but in 1946, the Center for Disease Control was set up solely because of the malaria issue here. So,
I thought it was kind of a subtropical illness.
Right. Well, it is now. It is now. We wiped it out in the United States thanks to DDT and other things. But for a long time, it was an issue. And for our military, of course, that serve in tropical areas, it's still a huge issue.
And it was a big issue during the building of the Panama Canal.
That's right.
It and yellow fever. And the way it was eliminated there also was through the use of DDT and netting.
Right. And DDT isn't used much, although there are African countries now that are going to start to use it again because the malaria problem has become so severe.
Well, how effective are mosquito nets in preventing the spread of the disease?
Well, it's fascinating. The mosquito and the malaria parasite, as you know, have been around for millions of years. They've adapted to everything that we've come up with. And so bed nets, insecticide-treated bed nets, very effective. But one of the things that is now being researched is that mosquitoes are starting to bite earlier in the day. People go into their bed nets at night, and the mosquitoes are adapting to that, and they're starting to bite at earlier times. So we're going to have to do more than bed nets. We're going to have to ultimately come up with something like a vaccine.
Isn't part of the problem that mosquitoes have adapted over the years to different ways we fought it? For example, quinine.
That's right.
Quinine used to be the way we dealt with malaria. What stopped it from being effective?
That's right. Yeah, the mosquitoes and the malaria parasite, which lives inside the mosquito, particularly lives in its salivary glands, has adapted also. And so you take something like the HIV virus has, I think, somewhere between 9 and 13 genes. The single-celled malaria parasite has 5,300 genes. If one of them mutates, it may become resistant to the drugs.
Is it just found in mosquitoes, or are there animals walking around with malaria that aren't affected by it that are then bitten by mosquitoes that then bite humans?
It's mostly mosquitoes. There is some bird malaria. There's some monkey malaria, but it's mostly human beings and mosquitoes.
When was the disease first documented?
Oh, it goes back literally thousands of years. We find at least 2,000 to probably 4,000 years ago, we've seen evidence of malaria.
Every year, 2.7 million cases of malaria originate in the Americas, but that's North and South America?
Yeah, mostly South America.
Only 9% result in death. In comparison, Africa has 247 million new cases annually, and 30% result in death. Why does Africa have a higher mortality rate?
Well, Africa has a higher mortality rate because they have almost no public health infrastructure and they have very little prophylactic effort. So when I went to Ethiopia, for example, I took a course of medicine. I think it was mefloquine at the time, a derivative of quinine, that cost me $350. That would be twice the average income of an African today. And one of the young girls that I write about in this book, a woman who I'd met, a 13-year-old who I'd met, who died named Alima Dari, died because there was no hospital to take her to. And she was misdiagnosed with tuberculosis when, in fact, she had cerebral malaria.
Well, Nigeria, which is the hardest hit, is oil rich. Why can't it fight malaria?
Well, again, there's huge disparities of wealth in African countries as there are in other places. And again, those who are most affected, I think, are just so vulnerable and voiceless. They don't have a say in how their economic wealth is distributed.
So malaria begins when a mosquito bites us. And then what happens?
Well, when the mosquito bites us, and only female mosquitoes bite because they need our blood to lay eggs, they need the protein in our blood to lay eggs. If they're infected with the parasite, if that mosquito bites you, she'll spit a little bit of saliva into you, and probably some of the parasite will go in into you as well. The next mosquito that bites you will suck up that parasite and pass it on.
Well, you could also get bacteria or a virus. What makes a parasite all that different?
Well, this parasite goes through many different life cycles. That's the most challenging thing about the malaria parasite. It goes through three or four different life cycles, and every time you think you're about to capture it, it morphs into its next stage. So it's very, very challenging.
My guest is Bill Shore, has written a book called The Imaginations of Unreasonable Men, Inspiration, Vision, and Purpose in the Quest to End Malaria. It is published by Public Affairs. The researchers you write about are working to develop a vaccine. You can develop a vaccine against a parasite?
There never has been a vaccine against a parasite. That's one of the things that makes these men and women unreasonable in a way. It's quite an enormous quest. So there's never been a vaccine for malaria or any parasite, although there have been immunogens, things that we know that would protect you that have been proven to work. We just haven't figured out how to get them into your bloodstream.
And are there... I'm worried about Haiti right now because typhoid has broken out. Is it likely that malaria will come back to Haiti, which I think pretty much wiped it out in the past?
Yes, they had wiped it out. It's possible. I think it's unlikely that it would because I think they would be able to do what is necessary in terms of spraying and so forth. They have a different set of problems having to do with unclean water and dysentery.
Just 2 days ago, Dr. James Quigley, a researcher at the University of Illinois in Chicago, announced what he believes to be a major breakthrough in preventing the transmission of malaria between mosquitoes and humans. You begin each chapter by quoting press releases from the past 25 years, making similar kinds of claims. Have people in the field become a bit cynical about these regularly declared breakthroughs?
Yeah, I'd say those who have been working to eradicate malaria have been really on a roller coaster. So back in 1984, the New York Times had a major story predicting that malaria would be ended within the next 6 to 18 months because of a vaccine that was going to be developed. We also went through a period where we got so close to eradicating malaria that people let their guards down and it came back stronger than ever. So for many years, frankly, until 2007, when Melinda Gates said the word, eradication was called the E word. Nobody would say it out loud. Now people believe it's possible again.
The same sort of thing that's happened with tuberculosis, where it seemed like it was on the verge of being eradicated and now it's come back.
I think that's exactly right.
Dr. Quigley's findings sound similar to the work that you described being done by Marcello Jacobs Lorena at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Are you familiar enough with the details of this weekend report to speak on the differences of approach or in the findings?
Yeah, I actually think they're pretty similar. One of the things that you found is that some people are trying to fight malaria by triggering your immune system. Some people are trying to fight it, like Dr. Quigley and Dr. And Marcello at Hopkins, by blocking its transmission so that the parasite literally cannot get through from the mosquito's salivary glands, can't get out and into your liver.
You mean your body would just prevent the parasite from coming into it? Is that possible?
Well, it is possible. The parasite gets into your red cells. It's almost like if you think of a lock and a key. It doesn't just force itself in. There's a molecular and a genetic code, and if you can change that, you can actually prevent the transmission.
Well, that sounds promising. Why hasn't it worked?
I think the concern, again, is that the parasite will continue to adapt, and it does.
There are a range of approaches to finding a vaccine. Can you explain the kind of work that Steve Hoffman is doing?
Well, yes. Steve is one of the people that really got me fascinated in this in the first place, because when I met him, he was in a small strip mall without any funding at all, working on a vaccine that had been discovered in 1968. And it was based on the idea that if you take the mosquito that is infected with the parasite, if you radiate it to weaken it, and then you extract the parasites and I inject those into you whole, for example, or better yet, and this would not be practical, if I let those mosquitoes bite you, which is what Steve did, you'd find that you have close to 100% protection against malaria. But of course, they said the idea of either letting people be bit by mosquitoes as a form of inoculation, or dissecting mosquitoes' salivary glands and extracting the parasites and then injecting them, is so impractical that it could never be done. Well, after 40 years, Steve Hoffman decided maybe impractical is better than a million kids a year dying from malaria. And the first thing he told me that I thought was actually connected to your very first question about the issue of hunger and other issues is he said the solution to a malaria vaccine is not scientific discovery. It's biotech engineering, meaning we know something that works. We just have to figure out a way to scale it up and get it into people. And that's true of hunger, education, a lot of the other issues you and I care about.
He's doing it with an entrepreneurial approach. He's not doing it through some major medical institution.
No, that's right. He was in the government for quite a long time. He ran the Bethesda Naval Medical Center's vaccine development unit, but then he started his own biotech company called Scenaria.
Wouldn't one approach be to map the genome of the parasite responsible for malaria?
Yes, and in fact, Steve led that work to map the genome. That was one of the first things he did. He actually worked with Craig Venter at Celera, who, and as you know, Craig Venter mapped the human genome. But first they mapped the mosquito genome and the malaria parasite genome. So it's created a wealth of information, but as a lot of people have said, even when it comes to medicine affecting human beings, unlocking the genetic code has not answered all the questions that we thought it would.
Another researcher is Jay Kiesling. What's his approach?
Jay Kiesling is working not on a vaccine but on a medicine, but I'd say the same philosophy as Steve, which is that it's not scientific discovery, it's biotech engineering. He's creating a synthetic drug called artemisinin. There is an artemisinin that exists now, very rare, very expensive. He's creating a synthetic version of it through biotechnology.
Based on Chinese medicinal approaches?
That's right. The Chinese used it very effectively, and we rediscovered it during the Vietnam War.
GlaxoSmithKline is in the clinical trial phase of a vaccine called RTS-S. What does RTS-S stand for?
Well, those are just the initials of different genetic markers. But they are clearly the front runner in this race to develop a malaria vaccine. They're in a clinical trial now with 17,000 children in Africa. So there's a lot of hope.
But it's okay to test it in Africa, but not in the United States. There have been many complaints about us testing drugs and using people from third world countries as guinea pigs. Is that what's happening here?
Well, there's a concern about that. So Steve Hoffman, for example, is in the first phase of trials, and he's testing his in the U.S. It would be hard to test 17,000 kids in the U.S. because we don't have enough malaria prevalent to do it. But African countries have exactly the concern that you've put your finger on.
So let's say we come up with a vaccine that is effective. What we saw with HIV/AIDS is it's still very expensive to try to eradicate the problem. How would we deal with inoculating so many different people all over the world?
Well, that is, as they say, the $64 million question. And from where I came from in the nonprofit field in the United States, I've often thought about, you know, when you come up with a better mousetrap, when you have an idea for something that works, how do you get it to everybody that needs it? In Africa, those problems are so compounded by the lack of electricity, the lack of refrigeration, the lack of a public health infrastructure. Not a lot of people have thought about that as hard as they need to. Partly that's because the proof of the vaccine is still a couple years away. But the Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is doing a lot of work on how will we create this distribution system.
But if we get rid of enough of it, won't that still have a compounding effect? For example, not everybody has been vaccinated against polio, and yet we don't see polio coming up anymore because so many people are immune to it.
That's right. And with polio, you know, we've basically, almost wiped it out, but not quite. And we're trying to do that in the last few countries. With malaria, we're still so far, I guess, from where we are with polio. So many, you know, as you said, 800,000 some kids dying every year, not to mention.
And most of them are under five.
That's right.
Is that because their bodies as yet are more vulnerable than?
You're right.
When we get older?
That's right. If you live past five, you'll probably get malaria again as an adolescent or adult, but you won't die from it.
Bill Shore is the founder and executive director of Share Our Strength, which is the nation's leading organization working to end childhood hunger in America, founded in 1984. He will be participating in a talk with New School President Bob Kerry tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. For more details about that, go to our show page at WNYC.org. His book, The Imaginations of Unreasonable Men is published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.